You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Come from you, ghetto people, yeah.
What are you gonna
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything that on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Maafa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today. Hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, need to do, should do, must do, can do, will do. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But if it's not, I'm quite sure you'll get it done anyway, even though in some parts of this country, the weather is going to be terrible. Extremely cold. So be careful out there, brothers and sisters, as you continue the forward struggle for our liberation, self-determination, independence, and sovereignty, which is utmost. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can go to timeforanawakening.com. Look for the red, black, and green lion with Africa imposed and check out previously recorded programs that are dated and titled by my good friend, Brother Kwaku. Appreciate you. Also, other programming here on Time for an Awakening Media on Mondays after my program, not right after, but later that evening, and all times are going to give are Eastern times. Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia from 6 to 8. Right after Acres of Diamonds is Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness, from 8 to 10. On Fridays, if it's Friday, and today is Friday, so at 8 p.m. this evening, it's time for an awakening, brothers and sisters. That's right, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., it ain't me, it's Sister POC and her program, Revive, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Sunday. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. WeBuyBlack.com. Go to WeBuyBlack.com to get everything you need from American African-owned businesses. It is the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses. It's WeBuyBlack.com. Also, if you're in the Atlanta area, at the Greenbrier Mall, WeBuyBlack.com has a kiosk, and they sell products that are produced by us, laundry detergent, toothbrushes, toothpaste, batteries, deodorant, liniment for your aching bones, all kinds of stuff. So check them out at WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. My good brother Bomani Tahembe has been taking our brothers and sisters home for many years. He's been taking multiple tours, and he just came back from one last in November. He's going to have one in May, and you want to need to know about it. So go to AfricaForTheAfricans.org and check out when he's going to go in this year, May, how much it's going to cost, and you can start saving now. Okay, if you want to see pictures of the previous tours, particularly the one in November and May of last year, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007 of previous tours. The Shrine of the Black Madonna, they got books, and I'm always promoting books. They have books, furnitures, paintings, artwork, The red and black and green shoes, you name it, the Shrine of the Black Madonna, located 946 Ralph Dibbitt Abernathy Boulevard here in Atlanta in the West End. The number to call is 404-549-8676. Also, too, they have a class on Saturday, tomorrow. Know Thyself. Every Saturday, it's open. It's free and open to the public at 1:30 to 3:30. Brother Olatunji is the presenter, and that is every Saturday. Also, too, if you can't go to class but you want that knowledge, they have put together a multimedia library, over 15,000 video files, over 15,000 images, over 40,000 audio files, and over 2,000 books. It is currently 4.5 terabytes of African enlightenment. It could be all yours. Contact the Shrine of the Black Madonna. Contact Brother Olatunji. Books. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, which is located right near the We Buy Black kiosk. The Medu Bookstore in the Atlanta area. Medu means writings. There's a word after Medu, it means nature, writings of the God. The Medu nature, what the Greeks called hieroglyphs. The Medu nature. And they have books. If they don't have the book you want, they'll get it for you, believe me. Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia. My good brother, Brother Jamu. Number to call there is 404-519-8107, 404-519-8107. And if he doesn't have the books that you need or that you want, he'll get them too. He'll get them for you. He also has the red, black, and green shoes, the NASGAS shoes. He also has the white ones, the new UNIAs. But, of course, the one I like the best are the Nat Turners. Love them Nat Turners. Ulu, Us Lifting Us. They had their program last night, every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Ulu, take the number down. I'm Blog Talk Radio, 929-477-2789. Every Thursday at 9 p.m. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People, in the spirit of Ujamaa, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. We pull our money together, and we have a cafe. Cafe Ulu, located 2036 Sylvan Road in the Sylvan Plaza, and we sell coffee. Open Monday, 11 a.m. to 7 p.m., Tuesday through Friday, 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., and Saturday and Sunday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. And we got Cameroon, Tanzania, Kenya, Ethiopian, where coffee originated. We got coffee. Everything that we sell at Cafe Ulu is produced by us. We have loose teas by our brother in Atlanta. We even have potato chips produced by our brother and his two daughters. Symphony potato chips. I mean, I'm telling you, two dough girls, delicious cakes and bakery. So check us out, Cafe Ulu. Go online. If you're not in the Atlanta area, go online and purchase some coffee. CAFEULU.com. CAFEULU.com. Also, check out the website of usliftingus.com. One of the products we sell at Cafe Ulu is Ambrosia. My good brother Novak Young, his product Ambrosia is a delicious vitality drink. And it has alkaline water, ginger, turmeric, cane sugar, chlorophyll, hibiscus, cinnamon, aloe vera, cayenne, and spirulina, and all kinds of good stuff. It's a delicious vitality drink, Ambrosia. Baba Baruti will be speaking tomorrow evening at the Wadada. Health and Market Juice Bar, the Wadada Health Market Juice Bar, 878 Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard on the West End, 5 p.m. to 9. That is tomorrow. The Elements of Warriorhood. The Elements of Warriorhood. We need warriors. And then Saturday, February 2nd, Mama Yabaruti will have an African Sisters Only meeting discussing navigating the challenges of African womanhood, featuring yoga with Mama Yemi and the Sister Circle. That is Saturday, February 2nd from 5 to 9 at the Wadada Health Market and Juice Bar in the West End. And the anniversary of Akabin Institute and Akabin House, 20th anniversary celebration, Saturday, March 2nd at the Sweet Spot, 675 Metropolitan Parkway in Atlanta. Can't wait for that. We'll really be pumping that up. That is going to be a very big thing, and we need brothers and sisters to support that. That is vitally important to support the adventures and the things that we as African people are doing positively. Before I get off into my guests, and I'm very excited, and I know you are too, we got the Black Panther in the house, Brother Ben Njai. And but we're going to do our daily revolutionary thoughts, the Inyesesim. I'm going to do yesterday as well as today. I think they're both very pointed. Sometimes I'll do that and sometimes not, but I'll always do on the day of the broadcast, whatever that day may be. January 17th. I believe it is better to die in battle rather than to hold aloft a very revolutionary and very pure banner and to do nothing. Hugo Chavez. War is bloodshed, and any good warrior firmly commits to the liberation of his or her people knows that death is nothing less than the opportunity to seize in the effort to remove the threat to his or her people's ability to be themselves. War is not a sandbox for vainglorious cowards in need of attention for an unearned glory. It is not a platform upon which one makes grandiose declarations about freedom, revolution, and martyrdom. It is a place where one works to reach these ideas. So, warrior, have faith in what you do now, here and now, right now, at this very moment, not in what you have done or intend to do, now that we are winning and that there is no room for doubt drains. Advance. Never accept your current position as a resting place. Never stop until you have become your ancestors in all their glory, goodness, and splendor, and return the African reality to power. Affirm, I do not make excuses. Affirm, I do not make excuses. January 18th. The psychopath is the individual who consistently is in conflict with other people or groups. He is unable to experience guilt, is completely selfish and callous, and has a total disregard for the rights of others. Dr. Bobby Wright. The voices they hear in their heads are not aliens, demons, or the devil. There is nothing strange or foreboding about those who speak to their minds from the inside. They are their ancestors instructing and prodding them in their way. Every people hear their ancestors urging them to be themselves. Every people receive some degree of internal guidance about being what they have always been. An external socialization is never enough to cause individuals to feel compelled to carry forth their legacy, whatever it may be. And a European legacy is a hunger for victims, is the most deprived, sadistic of ways. Their record is incontestable. Insanity courses through their veins. Death gives them life, unlike others who are given life through life. They search for life, emotional content, through psychic shock. The greatest rush comes through the giving and receiving of trauma. And the greatest trauma is death. This is why they are master sadistics and born killers. Sometimes because we are being socialized in the insanity of their ancestors and have become distant from the wisdom and urgings of our own, we hear their ancestors' voices and mistake them for ours. I do not listen to the voices of psychopaths. Affirm, I do not listen to the voices of psychopaths. Inyesesim, the calendar of revolutionary, daily revolutionary thoughts. Brothers and sisters, once again, welcome. This is African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network. And today we have a real special guest. And that is my good brother, young man who I've met when I first moved here to Atlanta 4 years ago, who impressed me deeply. And that is Brother Ben Njai, the Black Panther. How you doing, dear brother?
Lafia Mandala Bibi Fuhudiye, which basically means peace, power, and African liberation. I'm doing well, brother. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I in the program with Bibi Fuhudiye. And a number of other sayings I have. I'm constantly trying to throw that out there to our people, man, trying to put something on our people's minds, because that's what this challenge is about, putting something on our minds.
Indeed.
So how you are you still out of the country?
Yes, I'm still out of the country.
Okay. Well, I'll look forward to you when you return. Are you returning here to the Atlanta area?
Yes.
Well, that'll be great. I look forward to talking with you and so forth, and hopefully maybe get you on the show on a regular kind of basis. That would be great, because I know with the information that you provide, I know our people need it. Now, you are a researcher. You have been doing some good research. I've heard presentations that you get. Are you still a member of the Amun-Ra Squad?
To some degree? No, I left Amun-Ra Squad, started my own research group, which is the Mossy Warrior Clan, but it's no disrespect. There's no bad blood or anything. That's still my family. That's still people that we collaborate with. But I thought it was best to create my own path. So I'm a Mossy Warrior Clan full-time now. But it's always respect, love, and honor to the Amun-Ra Squad.
Ashe. The Mossy Warrior Clan. I love it. Yes, sir. Now, I followed you on a couple of pieces that were on Facebook that people you engaged with, and one of the subjects was the Omic, and I thought that was interesting because I was under the impression, and I read Dr. Ivan Van Sertima, I'm a good friend of Rinoco Rashidi, and I support him and his efforts and the work that he has done over these many decades of bringing to the attention of us as people our African presence on around the world. You know, he has shown us physically our faces of us in such remote places that we would never think there were faces of us, because in some of those places, those faces of us are suppressed, you know, just like in Brazil and like in Southeast Asia, when they have something on TV, they will not show a person of that area, of that region, of that country who is melanated. They always show somebody who looks most Caucasian, you know, because we got to face it, the European has done a damn good job of putting himself at the top of the position with everybody else at a lower position, unfortunately with us at the lowest position. And that's why, as Dr. John Henry Clark said, we have no friends in this world. And if you want a friend, go to the mirror, and don't leave that mirror until you like what you see. Not that you like the arch of your eyebrows or the shape of your nose or whatever. Like who you see historically and culturally. Like who you see when you understand who we are as a people and embrace that and love that and love each other. So that's what time that is. But, you know, that's not what's happening in this world, because there's such a internalized hatred of ourselves in this world because of European, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege, you know. So, but when you were talking about the Omic, I was under the impression, you know, I remember many years ago reading about Thor Heyerdahl. Thor Heyerdahl believed that ancient Kemetic people sailed in the Mediterranean through the Strait of Gibraltar and into what some people like to call the Kemetic Ocean, which is called the Atlantic Ocean, and because the currents will sweep you westerly, that they ended up in the Gulf of Mexico and brought knowledge and information to that part of the world, that those people, to honor them, made those big, huge stone Olmec heads, because the Olmec Empire was the first civilization of note in the Western Hemisphere. And and so I was under the impression that people made these stone heads in honor of the Africans who had sailed there, you know, literally over, thousands of years ago? What is your understanding of that? Because I know Rinoco still promotes that and others still promote that idea.
First, I want to say that we have to have an understanding of a couple of different things before we attempt to have a discussion about this issue. Number one, we have to understand the time period in which the research by Ivan Van Sertima and others, it's not just Ivan Van Sertima, it's Clyde Winters, can't remember the other gentleman, David Imhotep, gentlemen like them. But it was a time period in which we were fighting for an African narrative in scholastic studies, because we were told from the beginning of academia, we had no history.
Right.
We had no traditions. Our history starts with slavery.
Right. Right.
So throughout years of research, we discover that's not true. We discover that we have more history than we could have even imagined. In an attempt to continue that research is the mindset in which the Olmec theory and hypothesis arose. Now, people must understand. You mentioned a gentleman that said he believed the sailing of African boats on the Atlantic Ocean and the current would push you towards the Gulf of Mexico. The key word in that sentence is he believed.
Well, one thing that Thor Heyerdahl did do is he proved it. He made a boat of reeds. He sailed it in through the Mediterranean. It sailed through the Strait of Gibraltar, and it sailed through the Atlantic Ocean. He said,
"Yeah, I've yet to see the evidence on that. I've heard mm-hmm. a lot of people mention it,
okay.
But the evidence is lacking in that claim."
Okay.
And I always say, demonstration beats conversation. We can converse about it all day, but until we demonstrate it, it's just speculation. So when you talk about the Olmec hypothesis, because that's what it is, it's a hypothesis. During this time, a lot of things were not available as far as research. In 2019, we have a lot of tools available that we did not have back in those days. When we talk about back in those days, if you look at some old maps of races, just what they classified as races, you'll see some terms on there you don't recognize. You'll see some terms on there called Arctic. Yes, at one point in time, Arctic was a race. We know today that makes no sense, that people that live in a region are not genetically mapped, so to speak. There could be people that live there that have no relation to each other. But at one point, this is what we thought about race. So I say that to say the Olmec hypothesis was based off of what I call lookership. And that is looking at something and determining what it is just by looking at it. We have to understand that this process of determining what things are by looking at them is problematic. I say that because we get tricked with our senses every day. There are people of a lot of different races that live in the world. Some people look like other people that have nothing to do with racial classification.
But even the,
you'll meet people.
Even the racial
classification. Let me finish, please.
Okay.
You'll meet people that are Hispanic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or they claim to be Mexican or something of a Hispanic nature. But when you look at them, they may look European. And they'll quickly correct you. You're like, no, everybody says that, but I'm actually this. And you're like, man, looking at you, I would have never known that. And this is the problematic thing when just looking at something. You have to do the analysis. You have to do the research. You have to produce evidence. But what we did is we looked at something from a culture and said, that's got to be this.
Mm-hmm.
But time has evolved, right?
Right.
Time has evolved. So has improvements in research.
Right.
Now we're looking at it and going, wait a minute. That's not necessarily true. And my only obligation to Black people is to tell them the truth.
I say.
Not to present feel good, what I call feel good scholarship, not to pander our egos, not to try to make us where we're not. We have to take the evidence. We have to analyze the evidence. We have to demonstrate what we're talking about. Once it is demonstrated, we look at the sources, we look at the evidence by any means that you do, anthropology, paleontology, archaeology, whatever you use, whatever your method, it has to be demonstrated. When I started looking into the resources and the references that Ivan Ben Sertima and Clyde Winters and Renoko Rashidi often put in their books. I noticed several errors. Now, I had heard people claim that it wasn't true before, but I never really looked at it. When I started to examine it, I started to see why different people were saying what they were saying. Several errors. Then I discovered that the whole entire concept does not come from an African root, meaning that people like Clyde Winters, people like Renoku, people like Ivan Ben Sertima, did not develop this hypothesis organically. This hypothesis comes from white people, namely Leo Weiner. There's another gentleman, author, he has a strange German name, author Waffman, I believe. And then there's another Spanish gentleman that it came from. These are the three people that started this theory, this rumor. And basically, the research that we find from Clyde Winters, Ivan Van Sertima, and others is built on top of that foundation. So I don't mean to make people upset. I don't do this out of jealousy or envy or to make myself sound smart or anything. I do this because of one key thing. If, in fact, these people are not African, and I'm not making any bones about it, I'm saying that they're not African people, and they were never African people. If this is true, we are doing exactly what Europeans did to us, to another culture. We are perpetuating this cycle of stealing culture on another tradition, just like white people tried to do with Kemet. You heard all the theories. Egypts are dark Caucasians. Egyptians are Middle Easterns. Egyptians are Greek people that assumed other identities. You heard all of that, right?
That's right.
But when it came down to demonstrate these hypotheses, you only have to point to one phenomena in history to say, okay, that those claims don't make any sense. And what I'm talking about is the 1974 Cairo
That's
Symposium.
Right. That's right. Dr. Jopp.
Scope and Theophile Obenga.
That's right.
Presented their evidence left a big gaping hole in those other hypotheses.
That's right. In fact,
further down the line, more and more research, more and more starts to come out.
That's
so
right.
They have demonstrated.
In fact, brother Benajad, the smoking gun, as far as I'm concerned, to that situation was the melanin dosage test that Dr. Jopp developed to when he can extract. Because for some time, the Egyptian government would not allow him access to the mummies. But once it was granted, he did the melanin dosage test, and there right then and there. I mean, he said, I can prove to you 10 ways that the ancient Kemetic people were African, were dark-skinned people, were melanated people, you know. And then, you know, the phenotype, the, you know, blood groupings and so forth. But the melanin dosage test, I think, was the pace de resistance. So, no, the bottom line. That was it.
The melanin dosage test was a great precursor to was basically the start to the beginning of the end of the white narrative in Egypt. Once they had the melanin dosage test, they could also start taking markings from mummies. They can also, you know, time goes by, and then you start to get DNA from these mummies. So we already know they're melanated people, right?
Right.
But white supremacists, they're crafty. So they're going to say, well, all the people with melanin aren't black, are they? They're correct. There are dark people of the world that are not black. But the precursor of determining melanin started this reaction. So years down the line, we take markings from the Egyptian mummies, right? We get DNA from the Egyptian mummies, and we go, uh-oh. We have DNA from Ramesu III, he's haplogroup EV38. Now, if people don't know what haplogroups are, haplogroups are a family of maternal and paternal lineages that descend from a common ancestor. They basically tell you about your ancestors tens and thousands of years ago. By him having that haplogroup, that is an African haplogroup. That is a haplogroup that is distinguished amongst African people, and its place of origin is in the Horn of Africa. And for those that don't know where the Horn of Africa is, we're talking about the Somali, the Eritrean, the Ethiopian area, where they would call ancient Punt back in the day, right? Mm-hmm. So they speculate. So this man's ancestors came from Punt, meaning he was an African. You fast forward to today, people that take DNA tests get that haplogroup to this day. I know people that have gotten E3V38, meaning they share a haplogroup with an Egyptian king thousands of years ago. That's what you call a checkmate. There is no more wiggle room in this argument. These people were African people, period. Over with. End of discussion. Now, you can say that there were other people there at different times, and we have those records via invasions, via people enslaving the Egyptians, like the Hyksos, the battles between the people of Avars. We have those records. But the kingship, we have it as them being African people. That's the ball game.
Yeah,
you know, no one can say that these Egyptians were not African. No one can make that claim anymore.
But see,
we have demonstrated it.
Right. But still today, even though that is a fact, and even though I always say that we owe Dr. Theophilia Obenga and Dr. Shinkanta Jop a great debt of gratitude for what they did in 74 at that Cairo Symposium. But still today, when you watch A&E, Discovery Channel, National Geographic, PBS, or whatever, or movies, they still, if there's a dramatization or illustration or a movie and it's ancient Egypt, the people are going to be looking Caucasians. But if there's...
Well, we have to understand that those entities have sold out. And what I mean by that is they have sold out for ratings, especially the History Channel. If you go look at the history program for when you were coming up, Bob Oshie, and look at it now, it's totally different.
Okay.
Back then, the History Channel used to have references, and they used to have things you could look up and book.
Right.
Now
it's
they
true.
Just roll the credits. The reason being is they switched from we don't know about Egypt to Egypt was invented by aliens.
Right. Right.
And that is specifically for ratings. Mm-hmm. Same thing with movies. They know if they were to depict ancient Egyptians as black African people, they would not get the bang at the box office that they want. So who do they put in there? They put well-known European actors. Mm-hmm. Christian Bale,
right.
Russell Crowe.
Right.
The people that bring people to the box office. It's a business for them.
But see, what happens
they
is...
They don't care.
I know, but see, if we don't infuse the knowledge to our people... And they just go by the Western standard or what is being dictated by the society, then that's who they'll think they are. You see, it's just
correct.
Like it's just like the movie The Gods of Egypt with what's his name in it? He was playing Set, and his other Caucasian was playing Heru, or just like what was that? The one where they go back in time and they meet
Stargate.
Yeah, Stargate. Just like Stargate or The Mummy.
Oh, that movie was awful.
Man, the movie The Mummy was really detrimental because the evil character. Right, the evil character was Imhotep. And if our children don't know who Imhotep was of the third dynasty, one of the greatest men in the history of the world with a first multi-genius, then they'll think Imhotep is an evil, mean, evil character trying to, you know, snatch up the pharaoh's lady, you know, see, so it's important
correct.
That we have this information given to, I don't give a damn about the rest of it. It's important that we get this information, you see.
Correct. And, but we have to understand also, and we have to tell our children that these are sci-fi movies. They're not based on a historical narrative. If you watch Gods of Egypt, You will leave the, if you have any understanding of Egyptian history, you will leave the theater wondering, what story is that? And where did they get it from? That never happened. None of that happened. They made up a story taking characters from Egypt and made their own story. It's kind of like when that guy did the Noah movie.
Right.
And it doesn't follow the biblical narrative. That's exactly what they did with Gods of Egypt. They made their own version of what happened in Egyptian history. So number one, we have to tell our children this never happened. This is a fantasy movie. This is a sci-fi movie. And then we have to teach them the correct narrative. But the reason I brought up haplogroups is when you take the haplogroups of the Olmecs, you're going to discover a couple of different things. The mitochondria, which is the female maternal side of these people, is mitochondria A. The haplogroup is A. Mitochondria haplogroup A goes back to Asia, meaning that the ancestors of these people were Asians. And I don't mean black people that were in Asia. I don't mean Africans that were in Asia thousands of years ago. No, I mean Asians as we know them today. Asians. If you take the Y chromosome of these people, which is the paternal side, you got to do both sides.
Right.
You will get a haplogroup Q. Q also goes back to Asia. And what is known as South Siberia, which is Asia.
Mm-hmm.
So the ancestors of these people on both sides were Asian as we know them today. And that is where they migrated from. So we have the DNA evidence that says, okay, we don't have an African root as far as genetics is concerned, right? And that's fine. You don't stop there. You just have to notate it in your evidence. But we also have to use archaeology, right? So in archaeology, Ivan Van Sertima makes a claim in his book about figurines. These figurines, he says, are distinctively different from the ones found in the Olmec tombs. And for those that are not familiar with Olmec history, they had tombs. In their tombs, they had these tiny figurines that were buried with people. These figurines look very Asian, if you ever look at them. Very Asian. Ivan Van Sertima makes the claim that these figurines are not to be depicted as the population. He said that he had found a native that had a collection of figurines that looked more Negroid. I said, okay. So we tracked down that source. Number one, the man that he named is named Alexander von Wutenau. Alexander von Wutenau is not a native. He's a European. That's the first thing that came to my mind of something is off. The second thing is he said that he does have a collection of figurines that look Negroid, but he told Ivan Van Sertima that the figurines that he has, he believes, are fakes. This was omitted from the research. Never heard this until I tracked down the source of this guy. He also said that he took them to the director of the Institute of Anthropological Research at the National University of Mexico. They examined the figurines. They, too, determined that they were fakes. So someone is trying to push a narrative, the Negroid narrative. But they were caught. The figurines are fakes. Now, why Van Sertima didn't put that in his book, I don't know. But the gentleman, Alexander Van Wutenau, also said that he, in his opinion, believed that the Olmecs came from Japan, which would be Asia. So, okay. No archaeology, no genetics, right? Okay, we don't stop there. We keep going. we get into linguistics. Fatal, fatal flaw right off the bat. Maybe people do not know this, but the Olmec language is undeciphered. That was the first roadblock I ran into. I said, okay, if the Olmec language is not deciphered, how did Van Sertima give linguistic comparisons in his books? So I examined what the method he used, and what he did was he used a Mayan language for the Olmecs, because, you know, the Mayans precede the Olmecs in New Mexico.
Right, you get Mayans, Incas, then Aztecs.
Yes.
And it,
the Mayas, Incas, Aztecs, and even before the Olmecs, you have civilizations like Zapotec and others. See, a lot of people think Olmecs were the first civilization. They were not. But this is the flaw. The Mayan people, you cannot do linguistic comparisons for the Mayan people for the Olmecs because of a couple of things. Number one, you don't know if they express ideals, morals, and beliefs the same way as the Olmecs did. You can't do that. You don't know if these people have the same words. You don't know because you can't read the previous text. So it's a problematic study, but I looked into it anyway. What I found was the translations he had for Medunetra, because that's what he did. He compared Medunetra with the Mayan language. The translations he had for Medunetra were incorrect. He had a word, Amentas, and he said that this word meant teacher. Anybody familiar with the Medunetra knows that teacher, instructor, the word for that in Medunetra is Siba, S-B-A.
Right, right.
So right off the bat, I started noticing words that were incorrect. He also claimed in his book that during the Ramesside era is when this contact between Egyptians and Olmecs started.
You mean
in that era?
With the 19th dynasty? The 19th dynasty of Ramesses and
around that time period. There's intermarriage periods between the 13th and 17th, and then you have the 18th and the 19th. So he claimed it was around this time period. So I'm thinking they were still writing in that time period, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why are there no hieroglyphs in Mexico? Or vice versa. Why is there no Epi script, which is Epi Olmec is the Olmec script? Why is there no Epi-Olmec in Egypt? Neither one occurred. I said, okay, that's fine. We don't have any linguistic. We don't have any archaeology. We don't have any genetics. We don't stop. We keep going. We do more archaeology. And about, they discovered that the Olmecs used to play a game with a ball. It was a rubber ball. Was called Ulama, and it has a longer name, but the shorter name is Ulama. Ulama ball games and courts are dating back to 1600 BC, right? They have ball gamer figures from at least 1200 BC and nearly 1500 ball courts. So these people like this ball, right? This date that I gave you is the start of the new kingdom in Kemet. Yet, there's no mention of this type of game in Kemet. Now, we got all types of games in Kemet. We got some sit-net that looks like chess. We got bowling. We got all types of games in Kemet. We don't have this game or anything like it. Not to mention, at the time period that I gave you, Kemet is at war. Kemet was at war, and it was a war that lasted a long, 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 long time, right? And at this particular time period, we're talking about the Nesut Bitis, or kings called Khatmos. Khatmos was a warlord. If anybody knows anything about Khatmos, he's a warlord. He was quoted as saying, "I only live to defend Egypt and rip open the bellies of the Asiatics." Mm. When he says Asiatics, he's talking about the Hyksos.
Right, those who are to the east.
He fought them to his... Go ahead.
No, I'm saying, yeah, that's right. Those who come from the east.
Right. He was a warlord. He was a tyrant. That's what he lived to do. He lost his life in battle. And I believe that the Hyksos thought they had won when they killed him. But his brother Atmos was much, much worse than Khatmos could be, because his battle cry was never again. And that is the depiction that they try to say is a biblical depiction, when he's on the chariot firing the arrows and
right.
people are running. And they try to link that to the
Exodus.
Moses narrative.
Right, to the Exodus, right.
Right, they're trying to link it to that. Well, that's Atmos kicking the Hyksos, the oppressors of Kemet, who oppressed them for 200 years,
right,
kicking them out of Kemet, saying never again. This is the time period in which this ball game of the Olmecs was going on. So people at war,
yeah, they don't have time.
Number
for...
one, don't have time to play no game. Number one. Number two, they don't have time to travel nowhere and play no game.
Right. That's right.
I'm like, okay, so this doesn't work. There's also some pyramids. Now, I want people to look this up. They're called the Corral Peru Pyramids. These pyramids were created right after the Giza pyramids in Peru. Because I hear people saying, well, who else could cut rock in this time period? Apparently, people of this region, because they cut rock right after. I mean, it was right after the, I believe, the Ur-Khafre, which is the big, well, it looks the biggest, but it's actually not.
Right.
But it's after Khafre's pyramid.
Okay.
Right after that one, these pyramids show up. And the thing about these pyramids there is these pyramids were abandoned. Remade these, abandoned them, and they dilapidated, and they didn't, you know, they're in ruins now. The Egyptian people did not abandon their pyramids. They took care of them for as long as they were in the region. But these people abandoned their pyramids almost right after they created them. So again, we have people around this time cutting rock. And now I'm not saying they're as magnificent as the Giza Plateau. Believe me, they're not. When you look at the pictures, you're going to be disappointed. But they are pyramids. So, again, we don't have any archaeology. We don't have any genetics. We don't have any linguistics. We now have to go to forensics. Do we have any materials from this area that we can find in Kemet and back and forth? So Ivan Van Sertima makes a claim about purple murex dye. He tried to tie cultural attributes to ancient Egypt and the Olmecs with this dye. He's claiming that this color was used as a color of royalty in Egypt and ceremonial artifacts like the fans and the umbrellas and sacred boats, the crook, the flail. For people that don't know what the crook and the flail is, it's what's on top of the sarcophagus when he's crossing his arms. Those instruments in his arms are the crook and the flail. He gives an approximate date, 1500 to 700 BCE. He also claims that this value of purple spread to Phoenicia, where it took the same royal meaning. I said, okay, let's find this color. The issue with this claim is we can't find any evidence to validate this claim in Kemet. From the archaeological evidence, the murex purple dye was manufactured in a place called Crit in 1600 BC. It was heavily valued in the trade and seen in Syria in the 1400s. No one has been able to find the specific dye that he's talking about, the purple murex dye, in Kemet. But what's even more baffling
is the dye can't even be found amongst the old men. Van Sertima cites a man named Medine Zeno for this claim, and he claimed that the Olmec heads were painted in this purple dye. But the gentleman Zeno doesn't support that the dye was ever on the Olmec heads. In fact, the gentleman Zeno doesn't even discuss the Olmec heads in his work. So I don't know how he got, why he labeled him as a source. It doesn't make any sense. So we don't have any linguistics. We don't have any genetics. We don't have any archaeology. We don't have any forensics.
Wow.
So we have to go to what I call, at this point, you have to look at, is there any writing there, or any type of calendars, cultural icons is what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. Are there any cultural icons? And this is dangerous because cultural icons can be very misleading because all cultures have calendars, right?
Right.
All cultures have, you know, basic things in the culture that make things run. But at this point, I'm looking for something that I can specifically say that looks Egyptian. So I went to cultural icons. There's a letter from 1780 by a man named Abe Lorenzo Hervas. This letter was sent to a Francisco Clavijero. The letter claims that Egyptian influence on the Mesoamerican calendar. I said, okay, we might have something. Hervas claims that there are parallels between the Egyptian calendar and the ancient Olmec calendar. And the letter is claimed that February 26th was when the new year began for both civilizations. Red flag number one. I know from studying Egyptian texts that their new year is around July or in August. If no one believes me, they can cite Mfudishi, who does a new year celebration in Central Park during this time period, and Ashra Kwesi, who I've been on tour with, who celebrates it in Egypt on his tour when he goes.
And what month is that again?
It's around the July-August time frame.
Okay.
It fluctuates based mm-hmm. upon a star called Sabu Septa, which is what we would call Sirius B.
Sirius B. Yeah, I know that. So the Kemetic calendar, the year would be 6,259 maybe, or 58?
Something like that. Yeah, that's a good guess.
Yeah. The year 6,258. And if you would use July, August as the new year, then it would be 59. Mm-hmm. Okay. But listen, we're going to take a break.
6,200 range.
Okay. Absolutely. We're going to take a break. We come back, more of this discussion. Please, you can join this discussion. You can dial 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. My guest today is none other than Ben Njai, the Black Panther. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. Broken glass everywhere. People.
on the stage, you know they just don't care. I can't take the smell, can't take the noise. Got no money to move out, I guess I got no choice. Rats in the front room, roaches in the back. Junkies in the alley with the baseball bat. I tried to get away, but I couldn't get far. Cause a man with a tow truck repossessed my car. Don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. Standing on the front stoop, hanging out the window, watching all the cars go by, roaring as the breezes blow. A crazy lady living in a bag, eating out of garbage pails, used to be a fag hag. Such a dance to tango, skipped the life and dango. A zircon princess seemed to lost her senses. Down at the peep show, watching all the creeps, so she could tell her stories to the girls back home. She went to the city and got so did it. She had to get a punch, she couldn't make it on her own. Don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. My brother's doing fast on my mother's TV. Says she watches too much, it's just not healthy. All my children in the daytime, Dallas at night. Can't even see the game or the Sugar Ray fight. The bill collectors, they ring my phone and scare my wife when I'm not home. Got a bum education, double-digit inflation. Can't take the train to the job, there's a strike at the station. Me on King Kong, standing on my back, can't stop to turn around. Broke my sacroiliac, a mid-range migraine, cancer membrane. Sometimes I think I'm going insane, I swear I might hijack a plane. Don't push me, calm, I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. My son said, Daddy, I don't want to go to school because the teacher's a jerk. He must think I'm a fool. And all the kids smoke reefer. I think it'd be cheaper if I just got a job, learn to be a street sweeper. I dance to the beat, shuffle my feet, wear a shirt and tie, and run with the creeps. Because it's all about money, ain't a damn thing funny. You got to have a con in this land of milk and honey. They pushed that girl in front of the train, took her to the doctor, sewed her arm on the game. Stabbed that man right in his heart. Gave him a transplant for a brand new start. I can't walk through the park cause it's crazy after dark. Keep my hand on my gun cause they got me on the run. I feel like an outlaw, broke my last glass jaw. Hear them say, you want some more? Living on a seesaw. Don't push me cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. Say what? It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. A child is born with no state of mind, blind to the ways of mankind. God is smiling on you, but he's frowning too, because only God knows what you'll go through. You'll grow in the ghetto, living second rate, and your eyes will sing a song, cause deep hate. The places you play and where you stay looks like one great big alleyway. You'll admire all the number book takers, thugs, pimps, and pushers, and the big money makers. Driving big cars, spending 20s and 10s, and you wanna grow up to be just like them. Smugglers, scramblers, burglars, gamblers, pickpocket peddlers, even panhandlers. You say I'm cool, I'm no fool, but then you wind up dropping out of high school. Now you're unemployed, all non-void, walking around like your pretty boy Floyd. Turned stick-up kid, but look what you done did. Got sent up for an 8-year bid. Now your manhood is took and you're a Maytag. Spend the next 2 years as an undercover fag, being used and abused to serve like hell, till one day you was found hung dead in a cell. It was plain to see that your life was lost. You was cold and your body swung back and forth. But now your eyes sing the sad, sad song of how you live so fast and die so young. So don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under.
Yo, Mel, you see that girl, man?
Yeah, man.
Yo, that sound like Cowboy, man.
What's up,
yo, what's up, money?
Yo.
Hey, where's Creel and Raheem, man?
They upstairs cooling out.
So what's up for tonight, y'all?
Yo, we can go down to Fever, man.
We'll take out June, bro.
Hey, yo, you know that girl Betty?
Yeah, man.
My mom's got robbed, man.
Not
what?
Again,
she got hurt.
What is happening?
What's going on? Free. Don't nobody move nothing. Y'all know what this is. Get him up.
What?
Get him up.
Yo, man, we down with Grand Master
Flash and the Furious Five.
Is that a gang? No.
Shut up. I don't hear you now.
Shut up.
something. Oh, so what's the problem?
Get up, you the problem. Yeah, you the problem.
Yo, you ain't got to
get in the car. Get in the car. Get in the car. I said get in the car.
You are listening to Time For an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Other programs right here on Time For an Awakening Network on Mondays, Acres of Diamonds. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., African Perspectives. But on Mondays, Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8. Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. Black Reality Think Tank on Tuesdays from 8 to 10. And on Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC from 8 to 10. And on Fridays from 8 p.m. on, Time for an Awakening with Brother Ellie and Brother Richard. On Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then Revive on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. with Sister PLC. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. Yesterday was Muhammad Ali's birthday. And I didn't see anything hardly on Facebook or none of that. I'm like, wow, really? You know, I love Muhammad Ali. And he was born January 17th, 1942 in Louisville, Kentucky. He died June 3rd, 2016, excuse me. I had to be there. I had to go to Louisville to pay respects to a man I respected and admired and grew up watching and emulating. In fact, I boxed for a few years because of Muhammad Ali, a great man. We're going to get back. We got a caller. Brother Ben, we got a caller. I'm going to take this call, okay?
Cool.
All right. 602. Go ahead. Good afternoon, caller.
Yes, Brother Oshie, and good afternoon to your guest. Brother Marcus.
Yeah.
Go ahead,
you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, Brother Marcus. Yes. Go ahead.
Yeah, I got a few questions for the brother. Now, if we say that we all agree that the African is the first man, is the original man on this planet, right? We all agree on that, right?
Correct.
So, if the African is the original man on the planet, then wouldn't his DNA show up in all the ethnic groups that people the planet?
No.
Wouldn't some degree of his DNA appear in every other species on the planet, if we are the original man, if all other men come from us?
In 2019, no.
Okay. My next
Would
question.
Would you like for me to explain why?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. So the oldest African remains are traced to 300,000 years in South Africa. There we evolve, we change, we mutate, we do all types of things, right?
Hold on. You said in the oldest is found where in South Africa? 300,000 years ago?
In South Africa, in a place called PP13B, and also a place called Bluma's Cave, the oldest African genetic remains recorded. And when I say oldest African genetic remains, I mean like us, anatomically correct humans, meaning we walk upright, we speak, we talk, we do those things. 330,000 years ago from South Africa.
Well, then what happened to...
I'm not talking about the fossils. I'm not talking about Lucy, who is 4.2,
right,
or Artie, who is 4.4 million, or the skull found in Chad is 70. I'm
okay.
talking about archaic humans.
I see. I see. You're talking about Homo sapien. You're talking about Homo sapien sapiens.
Correct. That's what I mean by anatomically correct humans. Homo sapien sapien genus.
Now, you're not talking like Lucy. You're not talking Lucy then, right?
Not talking about Lucy, Artie, and the other fossils found that are much older than this date. I'm talking specifically about humans that are like us, who have finished
what we call the evolutionary process. They're Homo sapiens sapiens, and they are migrating, making tools, language, culture, things like that.
Okay.
So from 300,000 years ago till now, we've migrated. Some of us have migrated out of Africa. Some of us have stayed in Africa. Some of us have involuntarily been shipped out of Africa by the slave trade. Some of us have been, you know, some of us have went through thousands of changes. Through those migrations, mutations occurred. This is why we have other races. We have so many other people that popped up due to the environmental pressures and staying out of their temporal zone for thousands of years. Other races develop other genetic codes, other haplogroups, other things other than being African. This is why we have white people today, because they decided to leave. Thousands of years go by, you have a different type of human. That different type of human carries different DNA. So something that started one way hundreds of thousands of years ago is today something totally different. Okay. And through the process of natural selection, breeding, African DNA can be extinguished. This is why we do not propagate or endorse what is called interracial dating. This is one of the reasons. Because let's say you have a son, he mates with a young white woman. They have a baby. That baby mates with another white woman. They have a baby. That baby mates with a white man, and so on and so forth. And it's white. 3 or 4 generations of that, the product of that last relationship will have little to no African DNA.
Okay.
This is what happened to a lot of people on the planet, because they mutated, and obviously they made it with it themselves, right? So this is how we get other races. So today, you'll find people that don't have any African DNA because, simply, they're no longer African from that first migration hundreds of thousands of years ago. To put it simple, people change.
Okay, so couldn't that same thing apply to the Olmecs then? Couldn't it apply to them too? They could change. You said the Africans changed from this, so couldn't these people change too? Couldn't the same thing apply to those? Because looking at that state, I mean, it's not Asian. It's distinctly not Asian. And you yourself just said that it genes change. So couldn't that apply to the Olmecs too?
Okay, let me explain. Let me answer your question. I don't know if you heard the part of the show where I discussed what haplogroups are. But haplogroups tell...
Hello?
Hello? Hello?
Hello?
I can hear you, but I can't hear Brother Ben Njai.
He probably fell off.
Brother Ben, he's not in the country, so I'm not sure what has happened. What I'm going to do is I'm going to have him call back. Hopefully he'll call back. But, and this is interesting to me because
because it's kind of strange.
Yeah.
If the genes change for those people, then the same theory could apply to the Olmecs then.
Right.
Because looking at the face, it's distinctly African. And then we'll ask the question, how did the Asians get there?
Right.
You see?
Yeah, he hasn't called back yet. Well, you know, the thinking is, this, at least as far as my understanding is concerned, that human beings began in Central East Africa. Now he's saying human beings, Homo sapiens sapiens, more so. Human beings may began in Central East Africa, but Homo sapiens sapiens in a human development is further south. But then they migrate from that particular point, and they migrate north, they migrate west, And once they get to north, they can migrate east, you know. And so,
yeah, it raises a lot of questions. Yeah, it has a couple of questions, you know, because I was going to ask, how did the Asians get there? Are they all make heads Asians? How did they get that technology to build the pyramids?
Right.
You know? So,
okay, Ben, you're back. All right, brother.
I apologize, gentlemen. My connection went out. But what I was saying was, going back to haplogroups, the haplogroups of this particular people called the Olmecs, just pick them as coming from a region of Asia, and not Asia like Africans in Asia, but Asian people as we know them today. So the ancestors of Olmec people were Asians.
Okay.
We have to understand that. Not African people in Asia, Asians as we see today. People that come from Asia, not Africa. Now, before that, migrations, and as I stated earlier, people that leave from Africa, they go to different parts of the world. They sit in those parts of the world thousands of years. They become other people than Africans. Mm-hmm. They also migrate while they're changing. So, everybody's ancestors, if you go back far enough, are African. But if your ancestors was black, you black. If your ancestors was other, you're most likely going to be an other. That's how it works.
Well, you know, I often said that human beings began in Central East Africa, migrate from that particular point. And what makes human beings different is the ability to adapt to environments. Cause if you don't adapt, you'll die, you know? And I would give examples of like the Asian people who developed, you know, cause they were marching up into higher elevations. And of course in higher elevations, the precipitation comes down as snow. And just like if it snowed where you are today and then tomorrow it's sunny, when you go outside, what will you be doing? You'll be squinting because of the glare. Mm-hmm. The sun off the glare of the snow would cause you to, you know. And so Asians' eyes are the way they are. It has a method of survival for them as an adaptation.
Correct.
When you look at Australia, when you look at Australia, you see the men and women in Australia, their skin is dark. They have broad nose and thick lips, but they have real stringy hair. Because the environment there is in the day is hot and airy, but at night it's real cool. And you need that hair to cover your body to help insulate you, particularly at your neck, because the blood from your, you know, pumping the blood from your heart has to get to your brain for you to function as a human being. And so if the part where it gets to your brain is, and of course is your neck is so narrow, then you need to make sure that's insulated or warmed so that blood can go to your brain and you can function as a human being. So all of these things that, that are important for human development doesn't necessarily mean that there is a difference, because there is an origin for human beings. But what makes human beings different is that ability to adapt to environment.
To environment. Correct. Adaptation, mutation, environmental pressures cause these things. I want everybody listening to do something either now or later. Google a skin map. A skin map is going to show you the different areas on the world where people's skin tone look the same. And I want you to do something. I want you to look at Africa. And it's going to depict very dark skin. And then I want you to look at Australia. And I want you to look at the Middle East. And these places that are in the same zone. This is why their skin is dark. It doesn't have to do with so much of their DNA as it has to do with the sun. Mm-hmm. African people are dark because when we were born, we were introduced to a sun that is hotter in our region than anywhere else. It's hot as hell in Africa. And people that have been
know what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about hot one time of the year, like, you know, in the States when it's a summer. No, it's a continuous summer. I went to Senegal in December. It was 93 degrees every day. That is their reality, because Africa is almost carved in half by the equator.
Exactly.
So it's hot all the time. That affects you. That reacts with your tyrosine and creates what we call melanin. Yule melanin, to be exact. We have Yule melanin. There are other races that have Yule melanin, but our Caucasian counterparts have what's called pheomelanin. Pheomelanin blocks mostly UVB rays. We block mostly UVA rays, because that's what we get in Africa, UVA. They get UVB. When them places like Germany and Asia, Europe and Scandinavia and all those places, they them not getting the same sun that we're getting, because the environment is different.
Right.
So they have to block different type of rays. And that's why we look the way we look. Oh, go ahead, brother. I'm sorry.
Okay, I got one more question. I don't know if I have how did the Olmec Empire, how did that civilization die? And I'll hang up and listen to your response.
Okay, the Olmec civilization didn't really die. It transitioned. It transitioned into the Mayan civilization, and they carried forth. Now, the reason why the Mayan civilization died is because they overworked their land. They overworked land until they weren't producing crops. And any farmers that are listening, you know, if you overwork the land, it's a wrap for you. So they abandoned that area.
Okay.
Nothing they could do.
Brother. Yes. All right, brother. Thank you very much. I'll hang up on you.
Thank you, brother Marcus. Thank you for listening. Remember, you too can join this conversation at 215-490-9832. There's another issue. And I know that hopefully, like I said, you can come on the program in a more regular basis, because I'd really love for our listeners and for us as a people to understand clearly the history. And I know that a lot of us have made some real good feel-good history. There's some of us who believe that black people did everything, you know.
We got to get out of that, man. African people have enough great history within us to where we don't have to make up and hijack other people's history. We just don't. We just have enough. We have more than enough. We don't have to pretend to be the Olmecs, the Aborigines, the Chinese, the Japanese. We don't have to pretend to be different people in history. Beethoven, Abraham Lincoln. We don't have to do this.
Yeah.
We have enough. I'm telling you, we have enough.
Yeah.
And if you just start with Googling a country in Africa that you don't know nothing about, just a Google search, just a Wikipedia, you will learn more about that place just in a couple of articles than you would just trying to look at other places for African people.
Well, here's
the issue. Within the continental borders.
Right, exactly. Well, here's the issue that looked at the last couple of years and was kind of disturbed by, because it has caused such deep division. We already have enough problems, enough factionalism and fractions and separatism and all this old BS within us as a people. But one is that people are claiming to be indigenous to this land. In fact, one hypothesis, listen to this. I don't know if you heard this, but this is one hypothesis, is that we are not African. We're indigenous to this land. Europeans came here, took us from here, took us to Europe, and then brought us back, as slaves. They claim there were no slave ships, and that they're indigenous to this land. And I think one of the things that these brothers and sisters are making this claim is because they want reparations, or they want what the other indigenous people, Native American people, or what they call Indians, are getting or have gotten to some degree. And I believe that to be the case. But I know you probably heard this, or if you haven't, once again.
Yeah, I have. And I want to share a story with you that the brother Rick Kittle shared with me. Anybody doesn't know who Rick Kittle is, he is the, I call him the godfather of black genetics. Reason being, he's a black man. He went to Africa, got the sample from Africans, brought them back to America to determine which haplogroups and which DNA African Americans match up with African people. He is the part owner of African Ancestry.
Yes, I was about to say that. Yes, that name was familiar because I.
He's a friend of mine. We've had him on the show.
Okay.
The brother Shaw, and to my surprise, when talking with him, he has studied Don Henry Clark, Dr. Ben, Chancellor William, all of them. So, in fact, he names them as inspiration for what he does.
Ashe.
So, he told me a story about some African people that were in the Cherokee tribe. Now, if anybody knows about the Trail of Tears and the Cherokee history, at one point they enslaved African people. The Trail of Tears, they took their slaves with them. So these black people have been a part of this tribe for a long time because of their situation.
Let me interject this. Hold on. Let me interject this because in that Trail of Tears, when those brothers and sisters, when Andrew Jackson came down into Florida and moved those brothers and sisters out, have them march across this continent into the Oklahoma Territory, the United States government was going to give them some compensation for what had happened. But the Cherokee Nation said, you must, in order to get this money, you must be full-blooded Cherokee, which exempt those brothers and sisters who went with them on the Trail of Tears. I found it to be so damn egregious, but that was the case. And I was watching this one sister. She had the two long braids and talking about how, you know, how she was trying to build a house for herself and how she was being denied because of what the so-called Cherokee Nation said that they had to be. I just wanted to throw that in there. Go ahead, brother.
And that's exactly right. And in 2018, it happened again. Because, you know, now brothers and sisters can apply for that, for those benefits now. You know, if you got a certain amount of Native American in your DNA or genealogical records or something like that, you can apply. So what the Cherokee Nation did very recently is said, if you are not a Cherokee Indian, you got to get out of our tribe. So they've done this again. Again, just what you just said.
Man.
So the black people that were been a part of this tribe for years were upset. So what they did is they turned to Brother Rick Kittle. Rick, test our DNA and prove to these people that we have Native American in our DNA. So Brother Rick Kittles went to work in his lab with his team and his instruments and tested these people's DNA. It was three of them. They had very, very, very low levels of Native American. And when I say low, I mean 0.1, 0.2,
like a trace.
0.3. Not even a dang gone percent.
Yeah.
They were so upset with the results that, you know, they abandoned the genetic argument for trying to get their benefits back. Mm-hmm. I say that to say this. A lot of African people got them same amounts in their DNA. Old point this, if any. I'm going to tell you another story. My grandmother always told us that we had Choctaw Indian in us. She always said that, right? So when I took my DNA test, I said, well, I got to have some Choctaw, right? Ha! 0.1 Native American.
Yeah.
91% African. That's my DNA test. And I put it through different databases.
Mm-hmm.
Still, no Native Americans. So we have to understand that in the black community, African people were bastardized so much that people started to develop this rumor. And you probably remember it from when you were growing up, Baba Oshie. People used to say, well, if you have high cheekbones,
right,
you got Native American
in
you. You remember that?
Yes, I do, because in my people family, they wanted to claim that. In my family, they wanted to claim that, you know, that we had a lot of Native American blood. Well, we're from the South.
But the problem is they never told us. Some people were just saying that to be funny. Other people believed it. But whatever it was, they never told us that this wasn't true. So we grow up thinking that. Until you get tested, and then it's the shock. We have to understand that it's not cool to be African, number one. In America, it's not cool, it's not sexy, it's not to be African. There are 100,000 jokes about African people. So people started to create a different identity for themselves. And now we have it happening again.
And see, to
again,
me,
people are distancing themselves
right
from Africa. They say there's no slave ships. And I keep telling people, anyone that keeps asking this question is not putting in any effort to find them. Do you know there's a Wikipedia page on where the ships are and where they went and what happened to them?
But
and
see,
I mean, it's a detailed page.
But see,
with
that's,
references and everything.
Right. But see, that's my problem, is that they put this out. And if you go to YouTube, it was all over YouTube a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it's all over there.
You know, and I was just, and I'm
where
like,
are the ships? Where are the ships? Where are the ships?
Yeah.
They're not putting in no effort to find them. They even found a broken up ship off the coast of Africa a couple of years ago.
You know.
A lot of these ships were either sunk, and this is another thing tying into the Olmec thing. A lot of them ships ain't make it because of that travel in the Atlantic Ocean. We got to understand, during this time period, the Atlantic Ocean was made. Some of these ships made it, some of these ships didn't.
Right.
Some of these ships were broke up, some of these ships went back to China to continue to be the merchant ships that they were. See, people got to understand, there's no such thing as a slave ship. What I mean by that is, these ships were not designed for slaves. These ships were designed for merchant cargo, hauling things of value.
Well, I look at it this way. I look at it this way, though, brother, because
to be merchant ship when it was over.
Well, see, I look at it this way: is that this became the merchandise that they wanted to ship, and so therefore they fitted it.
Correct.
Right, they fitted it.
Correct.
So, yeah. You know, and so they could, you know, either do a loose pack or a tight pack or whatever the hell you want to call it, but
right,
just jamming Africans into that.
Think about a ship that is designed to carry barrels of salt. Let's just say that. But you putting bodies in there. Can you even imagine how tight and uncomfortable and people pissing on you and shitting on you? There ain't no bathroom breaks. They treated us like cargo.
Yeah.
On these cargo type ships. So when people are looking for slave ships, nah, brother, these were cargo ships that were turned into slave ships by Europeans. They weren't about to build a whole new ship to accommodate us, first of all.
Well,
and I'm telling you, if
well,
you
I can imagine
about slave ships.
Well,
just
I can
go to Google and type it in, and go to Wikipedia. They had a full article with references that you can check out.
Well, I can
detail records of what happened to the ships.
Well, I can imagine from the years, the hundreds of years, that Europeans
mm-hmm.
were taking Africans out of Africa and sending them to the Western
mm-hmm.
Hemisphere, because more Africans went to South America and the Caribbean before they ever went mm-hmm. to North
Absolutely.
America. And that they said, well, mm-hmm. we need to build ships that will maximize our cargo and
mm-hmm.
our ability to make more money and more money. Because, in fact, if you remember
right.
or if you know that some of those ships, the insurance on them required them to have a percentage. And they were literally throwing brothers and sisters overboard. You know, especially those who had become diseased or sick.
You got sick. You got to go.
You got to go.
You know, you can't infect everybody else.
Right.
We're serious about that.
And so our brothers and sisters.
How much cargo we were. You
know? Yeah. So our brothers and sisters here in this country who claim to be indigenous here, although I listened to a piece by Saru Seti, you know, I just can't get beyond all the serious profanity, but he was making a point about those brothers and sisters talking about being indigenous here. This country was an icebox. This country, the North American particularly, this was frozen over. This was the Wisconsin.
The ice sheets.
Yes. And so I don't think Africans or dark-skinned or highly melanated people could live in that environment over a period of time. They had to change. They had to mutate. They had to adapt to the environment. And so no longer did they need slender body, deeply melanated with close curled hair, broad nose, and thick lips. Now they needed a body that was short and stocky, heavy with fat and hair all over it, because they had to deal with a different type of situation, a different climate that lasted for the glacier for hundreds of years, you see. And so to me, those who are indigenous to this country after they came across the Bering Strait, as you said, has Asians. They changed from Africans to being Asians based on the adaptability, them coming into that part that they call Asia, into the Bering Strait, into Alaska, into what is now Canada, into the western part of the United States, to go further east, further south, and further straight west south than that, into what is now Mexico, and further south than that, which is now Central and South America. Those are the human migrations, and what made those human beings different is changing to the environments that they found themselves in. If they were a higher elevation of environment, there's an adaptable change of the human being to deal with that. If it is a hot environment, there's an adaptable change for the human being to deal with that. If it's an environment that is on the plains, it's, you know, in order for human beings to continue to live, it has to adapt.
Not only that, Bob Oshie, I will take it one step further. During the time period of the Laurentide Ice Sheet, which was the ice sheet that covered some of America, that was 20,000 years.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
Do you know?
How long was that? Say it again. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
20,000 years ago.
20,000, yeah.
Was the Laurentide Ice Sheet. It covered the Great Lakes region.
Right.
It merged with another called the Cordillera.
Right. In fact, when you said that, they used to call it the Wisconsin Glaciary Ice Age, because it covered all of the Great Lakes, but of course Lake Michigan, Superior, Huron, and so forth. All that whole Midwest went all the way down, all the way south into past Kentucky.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So this ice sheet 20,000. Do you know what is the oldest skeleton we have found in the United States of America? Do you know how old it is? 13,000 years ago, and it's a Paleo Indian.
Mm. So that's the oldest.
Meaning,
so you
say they were here 13,000 years ago.
So that's the oldest human remain found here in North America is only 19,000 years. 13,000 years. Okay.
Nobody was here because they couldn't get here. They have a glaciary period in America.
Hello? Brother Ben. Okay.
Hello?
We can hear you now. Go ahead.
Yeah, what I was saying is they have a glaciary period in America going back millions of years ago. Who was living here? Nobody.
You can't get here. You can't grow anything here. It was an icebox, as you said. And people want to tell me about millions of years in America. No, you were not. Nobody was here. That's why they had to cross the Bering Strait to get here. Well, nobody here. And I challenge people. Do you think these dungeons, these slave dungeons, is made up?
Yeah, those, no, brother, they're real. I've been in them. I've been in Gory Island.
I've been to Gory Island. I was about to mention.
Yeah, and in Ghana. Island.
And you know from going, yeah, the El Mino in Ghana.
Right, in Cape Coast.
You go from Gory Island, you got to take a ferry to get right there. And when you get there, you either have a guide and they'll take you to some of the oldest slave castles on the place, and they show you where the men were, the women were, the infants were, the whole King Kabuto. They got the chains. They got the prayer that they baptized the slaves in before they got on the boat.
Mm.
They got all that. And it's like, I think it's like 40 slave dungeons. Mm-hmm. Throughout Africa,
right? All on the West Coast. All on the West Coast.
These places ain't made up. Go, anybody that doubt me, book your ticket to one of these places and go. You will feel silly for ever doubting their presence. All of them got that door of no return. Once you go through, you don't come back. I was proud to say that I returned on behalf of my ancestors.
Ashe, me too. Ashe.
And it's going to be emotional for you. I'm just going to let you know that right.
And believe me, it will. Believe me, it is. You feel it. You feel that spirit.
So these people,
you feel that...
these Aboriginal Americans, I just see them as people, as Leonard Jeffrey said, they're suffering from a paralysis of analysis.
Mm-hmm.
They don't understand you are not a Native American. We cannot continue to do this the Native American people. See, this is why I advocate for getting out of America, because we're starting to be white folks.
Ashe.
we're starting to act just like them.
Yeah. Ashe.
You want to even talk about exterminating people and taking people's cultures? That's not what we do. You got people, black supremacy. Look, we need to be thinking about African sovereignty.
Ashe.
That's what we need to be thinking about. not getting back and getting and killing and all this other stuff. No, we need to set up our civilization so that we become a world power.
That's right. That's right.
But if you stay here too long,
see, that's
look
the
how
thing.
We start to think.
See, that's the thing. We don't understand us being here and the effect that it has on our minds, on our spirit,
yep,
on our physical nature, mm-hmm, of us being under this Caucasian rule, so to speak, and how it deeply affects us and how we hate ourselves because of it, because we can't be like them. And all we want and all we pray for is that crackers have some kind of epiphany, some kind of awakening, mm-hmm, that will allow us to be a part of what they have stolen and what they have created. Mm-hmm. And what they have created is for themselves. It is shaped and fashioned in their image and in their interest. But yet we want to deny ourselves to be like them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's deep. It is very deep.
I hate to tell people, it is not coming.
No.
You cannot appeal to their humanity. We've tried that. A lot of people are rehashing old things that were done, you know, even before your era,
right,
Bob Ocean. People
right
tried this stuff. I always point to, you know, the images you'll see of black men and women being hung, and there'll be a crowd of white people around them.
Mm-hmm.
I always tell people, pay attention to their clothing. They're very well-dressed. In suits, ties, hats, shine shoes. Did that stop anything from happening?
No.
Because you have people that say that, well, the police wouldn't be killing us if you people would dress a little better and say yes, sir, and no, sir, yeah, whatever. Mm-hmm.
Right, you pull your pants
we
up.
We tried that.
Yeah.
We tried that, brother. That didn't cut the mustard.
No. There's nothing we can do.
We have to understand. What did Kwame Ture say? He said that these things would work in a society and a people that had a conscience, and the USA don't have one.
That's right. That's right. They're amoral. They're amoral. You know.
So we have to understand that.
See,
you claim to be Aboriginal, trying to get you some benefits or some money or whatever you're trying to do, it ain't gonna work. First of all, you not that.
That's right.
Second of all, they ain't giving you no reparations, whether black, brown, white, green, or blue.
No.
It ain't gonna happen. You better build something and create some generational wealth. That will be your reparation to your children.
No, I look at it like this. I don't think that I think that we need to make a serious decision as a people. This is 2019. Supposedly, it marks 400 years of us being subjugated by Europeans. 400 years of our situation here, and we need to look at 400 years. Not, let me say this clearly, not that we celebrate anything within this 400 years, like the first of this, and we overcame that, the first to do, hell with that. We need to look at 400 years to say to us as a people, enough is enough. Let us.
Enough is enough.
Yeah. Let us
Let's
get ourselves together.
Let's not even
count,
Baba Hoshi, the 1,300 years before the transatlantic slave trade in which we were enslaved to the Arabs.
To the Arabs. Exactly. And why North Africa looks like it does today, while captivity
Correct.
And enslavement still goes on in Mauritania and, of course, in Libya. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we need to look at all of that. We need to look at all of that. I think the most important thing for us is to take a step back, look at this stuff for what it is, because there's nothing we can do. Brothers and sisters, there is nothing we can do. It hasn't happened. It's not happening now, and it ain't going to happen because there's nothing we can do. The European suffers from cognitive dissonance. He believes that he is superior. He believes by his God that he is ordained to do what he has done, to go around the world and take everybody's stuff in the name of. He went someplace. He didn't barter. He didn't bargain. He didn't trade. There wasn't no damn trade. He just took. He forced his ideology on you. He forced his theology on you. He forced his methodology and pedagogy on us. And yet we still believe somehow, some way we can make a prayer, you know, Monday is the observance of Dr. King. And I think it's the most hypocritical day of the year.
It is, because they didn't fuck with Dr. King.
No.
They hated Dr. King.
They hated Dr. King.
They hated
King.
Him when he was alive.
Right.
They were afraid of him when he died.
Right.
Same thing, but it was the same thing with Muhammad Ali.
Right.
When on his birthday, all these people come out and talk about how they enjoyed watching him fight and how inspirational he was. They hated him.
They hated him. He was vilified.
Everything under the book.
In fact, you know what I say? He went to the Mayo Clinic in early 80s. I believe they shot him up. With MS. You don't get MS automatically because you're a boxer. Ali didn't take the punishment that many, he sure in hell didn't take the punishment that he meted out to other fighters, especially in his early years, because you couldn't even touch him. He had a ideology, and he had a presence that they hated. He spoke in a way that they hated. So they wanted to silence him, and that's what they did. He became a beloved figure because he couldn't talk no more. That's what happened to Muhammad Ali. And that's why I love Muhammad Ali even before he was in the Nation of Islam. And even when he got in the Nation of Islam, I loved him even more because he was stepping to crackers telling them point blank what time it was. So, you know, they had to do something, and that's what they did. I will believe that, because there's one thing I've become very clear on in Western society. They do things in a manner that it's some, that some of us will say is just a, it's just a conspiracy. That some of us will say it's hard to believe. Well, damn it. They'll do anything to help maintain and sustain the privilege they created. They'll kill themselves. They'll kill other Caucasians, and they'll show the hell kill us. And I mean, you look at,
will kill us.
Yeah, I mean, just like Steph Curry. Steph Curry said, "We didn't go to the moon." I don't believe we went to the moon. Nor do I really give a damn if they went to the moon or not. And so everybody jumped on him, made him apologize, and so forth. I'll say this:
Kyrie Irving, Kyrie.
Right, right. Kyrie Irving with the flat Earth.
Yeah,
the flat Earth hypothesis, and that's crazy too. But there's one thing.
This is the thing about the moon landing, though. You can't take that away from them black sisters.
Oh, yeah.
Take that away from them black sisters.
Oh, yeah. Them sisters in Nassau. Yeah.
Them sisters in Nassau never went to the moon if it wasn't for them sisters. Them people didn't know how to work a computer.
Yeah.
Them sisters figured it out.
That's right. Yeah.
They come in there and say, man,
Sister Jackson. And she's, and Sister Jackson,
do the work.
Sister Jackson is, she's still living. God bless her soul. You know, but there's one thing. There's one thing that is clear to me, and I love for them to say something. And that is 9/11. 9/11 is an inside job, clear and simple. They did that. The United States government did that.
It just doesn't add up.
None of it.
Look at the evidence.
Exactly.
You know, because I'm evidence-based.
That's right.
And I tell anybody, I'm not the biggest conspiracy guy. But when you look at the evidence from 9/11, something is off.
That's right. Big time.
For one thing, jet engine fuel doesn't melt steel beams.
No.
It doesn't.
No.
But on that day, it did.
Yeah. And nor has a firefighter. I'm a retired firefighter, and we have high-rise firefighter training. And we've seen video. I've seen movies or videos, whatever you want to call it, from back in the day when other skyscrapers were hit by airlines and airplanes. None of them, zero, none of them, none of them fell.
They didn't fall.
You know. But and I'll give you all of that. I'll even give you Building 7. I'll give you that they crashed that plane into a field in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. But you can never, ever in your life make me believe that a plane was flying so fast and so low in the Washington, D.C., Maryland, Virginia area, so low that it misses all the wires, all the other stuff, and hit the Pentagon broadside and put a hole in it. But yet you don't see. And in fact, it was so fast, so low that when the nose of it touched the Pentagon, it disintegrated. That's why you don't see no wings, no tail, no engines. You don't even see the damn black box. But listen, man, we're running out of time having fun, brother. I knew this would happen. Appreciate you. Have a lot of admiration, love, and respect for you and for what you are doing and continuing to do. I'll be maintaining contact with you. Can't wait till you get back on this side of the world. But I know whatever you do, you're always handling your business. I will contact you again to make sure that you're doing okay. And hopefully you will come back again to visit us and impart historical information.
Always, man. What is my third time?
Yeah, it's your third time. Yes, it is.
At least it's my third time.
Yep, it sure is.
And I thank you for being an elder in the community. Your efforts, man. You're a shining example, whether you realize it or not, because everybody that's claiming or has made it to the age of ownership is not handling their responsibilities. And I can thoroughly say that you are handling your responsibilities as an elder.
Well, I appreciate that, Brother Ben Njai, the Black Panther. Thank you so much. We end this program, like we end all of our programs, with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. But not just the M-I-N-D. No, excuse me. Is the minds of the oppressed. And this program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E. Because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for. Dr. John Henry Clark quote. I'm saying to you, dear brothers and sisters, stay strong, stay straight ahead. Shem Hotep means go with peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters of Bibi Fahodie, have a blessed and wonderful weekend. Peace.